I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Smarty Pants, the podcast of the American Scholar magazine. I'm your host, Stephanie Bastek. When we talk about climate change and conservation, animals tend to steal the show. It is pretty hard not to cry at the story of the last white rhino or the colorful little frogs decimated by logging in the Amazon. But the extinctions happening on a daily basis all around us that affect us the most? Those are actually plants. Horticulturist Carlos Magdalena is on a mission to change the way we see the flora all around us. First captivated by the bogs and flowers of his native Spain, Carlos has since traveled the world from the Amazon to Australia in search of exotic species. But a lot of his work takes place in the greenhouses and aquatic laboratories of the Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew, where he's become known as the Plant Messiah. Famous for using groundbreaking left-field techniques to save species from the brink of extinction. It's especially impressive since Carlos does not have a PhD in biology and came to be a senior horticulturist at Kew Gardens in a somewhat serendipitous way. He joins us to talk about his new memoir, fittingly called The Plant Messiah, a nickname he has since embraced in his mission to spread the good word about green things. Thanks for wading out of the water lily pool to talk to us, Carlos.
No, thanks to you for inviting me.
So, since you were nicknamed the Plant Messiah, you've really come to embrace the title and all its responsibilities, a great deal of which must involve evangelizing for plants. So, why are plants so important?
Well, wake up in the morning and start counting how many plants do you use in a day, you know, and then you will probably realize that you wake up in a bed which has cotton as a linen, and then you will maybe have a coffee, maybe with sugar coming from sugarcane, or maybe beetroot. Maybe you have some milk, and then this comes from cows which have been grazing on plant stuff. And then probably before you blink, you have used 10, 15 plants before you maybe reach into work. So this makes the point that the plants are really important to us. You know, you don't need to just appreciate the beauty of them, just to realize the usefulness to humankind. At all levels, you know, plants give us plenty of materials and medicines. You know, 3 out of 4 medicines have been found in plants. They produce all the food, really. They are the primers of the food chain on, on our food systems. You know, we eat plants or things that eat plants. And so on, you know, and even into the arts, you know, if you think about things like Impressionism and water lilies and Monet, that will be just one of the many things that plants have given us, you know, inspiration, medicines, fuels, fibers, food, you name it.
So if plants are so central, why do plants need a messiah? What do you do, I guess, to publicize and protect plants?
Well, first of all, about 470,000, 400,000 plant species, of which 1 out of 4, 1 out of 5 is endangered. So there is about 80,000 plant species which are threatened with extinction. And then we are losing them at an amazing pace. So I think you need somebody, and better more than one person, you know, we really need lots of people working on this to avoid this loss of resources, really. It's not just the altruistic, typical conservation approach, you know, it's something which is vital to us and to our economies. And there was this moment also which I realized that they could make a much bigger difference than any other field of conservation. Because, you see, in the Royal Botanic Gardens, Kew, we cultivate about 18,000 types of plants. So I can be working on the conservation of hundreds of plant species at once, which is something which I cannot do so easily with animals. So there is plenty of stuff there to do, and then suddenly I feel like we need many more people working on this.
Right. One person can't save all of the plants in the world, for sure.
No, that's quite clear to me. That's why I it's one of the main reasons I decided to write the book, you know, just to kind of use a little bit this kind of character, the plant messiah, just to what a horticulturist can do for you, no? From preserving individual plant species to training other communities to help planting back forests to even discover new plant species.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about how, I mean, we think of places like the Amazon, for instance, or Australia, and huge changes in the ecosystem, you know, burning, destruction, logging. But even your hometown was hugely affected by politics and was changed even in the past century.
Yeah, sometimes we don't realize, but we have impacted the environment much more than we may think we have known. You see, in places like where I am from, there is this kind of corners in the mountains where everything seems to have been frozen on time, next to areas which are highly industrialized. So for me, it was quite easy to understand what has been changed and what hasn't been altered. And then one of the things you realize is that most of the well-preserved places where I am from, they are in very inaccessible areas of the mountains, because if we had more accessibility, we would have destroyed it. You know, if it wasn't in the last decade, it would have been in the last 200 years. So I think we are transforming the planet beyond belief. And then I have always the feeling that it could be transforming in a much better way. You know, you can destroy nature, but you can also create it. And even in the case that you need to really heavily transform it, there is always ways which you can mitigate the effects of what you do.
Right. And that's part of your work at Kew. But I really had no idea how much goes on there. You know, you see the greenhouses, you see the beautiful plants, you see the wonderful grounds, but there's so much going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. I mean, there is lots more than it meets the eye with Kew, really, because, you know, you have things like, for example, the herbarium. They have 9 million specimens, which are dead, but they are the basis for plant taxonomy. You know, how many species are there, where they are distributed. But then there is even more than that, because you see, nowadays taxonomy has become quite complicated. And then you also need to look at things as molecular biology. You know, you need to look at the DNA of things to know how they are related to each other. And nowadays you need to incorporate this in the taxonomy and the classification. You know, it's just like a little bit of molecular data with a little bit of field information, with a little bit of normal morphology that everybody can see, where you actually can really be sure what is a species and what is not. There is also a lot of research going on into other areas of science.
It sounds like a gardener's dream, but part of your story is really intimately tied up with the story of this one plant, for which I think is part of the reason why you're called the plant messiah. I'm going to butcher this. Ramosmania rodriguesi, the Café Moron plant, is that right?
Yes. Well, that was interesting, isn't it? Because I go to Kew, I get amazed with the place. But anyway, you find a newspaper in the tube which was left over by somebody, and then you start reading, and then surprise, you know, one of the articles there was an article about this plant species. There was only one plant left in the wild, and then even though they were cultivating them in Kew by, you know, propagating it by cuttings, it never set seed, and then it was bound to survive always in captivity, and then they branded something like in the lines of the living death plant, you know, like there is a specimen living, but then the species is dead as a species because it cannot reproduce in the wild. So that was part of my wanting to come back. You know, I realized like, oh, this plant is fascinating. The newspaper said that it was in display in the Pearl House. I think I hadn't seen it. So both things were kind of tied up one with the other. And then surprise, day one in queue, they put me in a glass house, and then this plant is also being grown in there. So I got quite of an obsession with this plant. And then after a few months of trying different things, I managed to find a way of cracking the way of getting seeds out of this plant. And it was quite amazing, the links on how I, you know, this plant gets me into queue somehow, and then I go and do something for the plant, and then the seedlings turn up to come up in different ways, so there is a different form which germinates from seed, which is the female form, which we didn't know about it, and then you restore the viability of the species, and that therefore can be put back in the wild, and then here we go back to Rodriguez Island, where this plant grows, and then a lot of adventures start from there. So it's interesting how one thing gets you into the other one, and then, you know, it's just like you start pulling the string, and then co-workers that I was a bit successful at propagating plants. And that was the first of a few other breakthroughs I did with some plants, and that was the origin of the branding of the plant Masaya.
So what's the secret of plant propagation? Is there, like, how many different ways are there of propagating plants, and how common is it to, like, bring a plant back from the land of the living dead?
Well, you will be surprised. Sometimes it's incredibly easy. I have had cases in Mauritius where there is the last plant in the wild, or the last two, and then you just go and take a cutting, and then... But there is, basically, if I have to explain this to someone, I think I will divide them in two main types. You have the clonal propagation, which will involve things like cuttings, grafting, division when it's a grass, or maybe, you know, when you have a bulb which starts putting small bulbils at the base. So this has the power that you actually are cloning the plant. You know, everybody was like super excited when they clone a sheep, but then people, including my mom, was cloning plants in the kitchen for a very long time. Nobody seemed to realize that plant cloning is something that everybody can do in their kitchen. So that's the first main group of propagation. The other one will be sexual reproduction. This will involve in flowering plants, will involve seeds or spores, for example, in the case of ferns. In that case, you get something which is the same species, but they are not identical with the mother plant which they came from. So all of these, in one hand, there is different ways you can propagate a plant, which you have different options, but then depending on what you do, you may have some advantages and some inconveniences, if you know what I mean, because everything has a downfall, you know? Like, for example, if you propagate always something from seed, you may start... selecting artificially traits which maybe are more popular in horticulture, and then you lose part of the genome of the plant in the long run. If you propagate by cuttings, then you avoid this because you are cloning exactly the same plant that it was in the wild. But maybe by having only one, you may be not able to produce it at a later date, and this will be necessary if you want to reintroduce the plant in the wild.
It sounds like you need a lot of judgment and just knowledge to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, as I say, I mean, there is a lot of knowledge to do, but it's more important that you get the basis and the understanding of where you want to get or what you can achieve.
Right. So, I mean, we've come this far without talking about what is now your favorite plant. I know it's kind of like picking children, but but we haven't talked about water lilies yet.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, that will be my favorite type of plant, you know, one of them. It's quite difficult, this thing, because with plants also something that happens is like there is this type of plants that they are always in the back of your head, plus there is all these other ones which just pop up, you know, like, oh, you know, you read something or you find some interesting plant and then there is a new gateway for you to learn there, and there is something new which you find amazing, and there is always these newcomer plants, you know, like they come to your head for the first time, maybe. Because believe it or not, you know, I've been working for this on years and I was always fascinated, but it never stops amazing me. You know, there is always another incredible plant I didn't know about it.
Well, there's one water lily in particular whose life you saved, much in the same way that you saved the Café Marron plant. I would love to hear the story of the Nymphaea thermarum. I hope I said that right. The little pop star plant, if there ever is one, who can fit inside a teacup.
Yeah. In the case of Nymphaea thermarum, this was discovered only on the 80s by a German botanist, Professor Fischer. And then he realizes that this plant was only found in this kind of a small spot. Basically, the whole area was less than 50 square meters. You know, I have seen kitchens which are bigger than that. Interestingly, aquatic plants go extinct at a faster rate than many other types of plants, because usually what happens is that aquatic environments, they become a little bit of islands of water in a sea of land, if you like. It's a bit of the opposite of the islands in the sea. So there was only about 50 plants left. So he was clever enough and then transplanted a few plants into Germany as a backup. Then they have this problem in which they produce seed easy, they germinate easy, but they didn't have much luck at raising the seedlings to maturity. So then I kind of got interested into this case. They told me that it was extremely difficult to grow, that probably I wouldn't be successful. And at that point, then it ticked the other box. You know, it's just like, it's difficult and I like it kind of thing. And then I had the same type of results and I start getting a bit frustrated with this. So one day I was cooking at home, actually tortellini, and then looking at the bubbling of the water, I was like going through all these things that affect plant growth, you know, temperature, nutrients, pH, blah, blah, blah. And then miss one of them, which is always being used by plants, but usually with horticulturists, we don't give them to them because there is plenty of it. It's the CO2. And then, boom, bingo, that make a big difference. And then I managed to grow like about 5 plants with the last 6-7 seeds, which I had from BOM. So that was there, and then that was that, and then the thing just stayed there. You know, I remember, I know, like, this is interesting because this plant perhaps it become extinct in a near future. Well, the thing was, the plant, by the time I managed to work out this, the plant was already extinct in the wild and I didn't know it.
Yeah.
So that was a bit of like, oh wow, you know, good job that I didn't find out this until it was done, because it may have made my hand shake a little bit more than usual, you know, if you know that those are the last 10 seeds you have. So that was a little bit different to the case of Ramosmania, because in the case of Ramosmania was like, this is impossible, nobody can make it, and then in 1 second, when you first see this fruit happening, you know that you have made it. But in this one was like the breakthrough wasn't so much of a firework party, if you like, you know, it was like, oh, good, you know, because you may need this in the future, when actually the truth was we need that last week.
Carlos Magdalena's book, The Plant Messiah, is just one adventure after another. And if you have even a passing interest in plants or conservation, I highly recommend it. I, for one, have been hugely inspired to propagate whatever I can get my hands on. So do check it out. As ever, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Till then, take care and stay sharp.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.